Are you a questioner, a wanderer, or even a bit of a snooper? If so, then you'll feel right at home in Knoxville. We've got miles of trails to wander in our urban wilderness, award-winning eateries to satisfy your culinary cravings, cultural sites to open your mind, and dog-friendly activities that'll have everyone wagging. Knoxville, calling the curious. Learn more at visitknoxville.com.
This is the Big E Sports Show on SB Nation Radio.
And online at SBNationLive.com.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios in Houston, here's Alyssa Walker-Campbell.
Hey, it is Friday night. Welcome back. SB Nation Radio and the Big E Sports Show, the next generation of sports radio. Before we get underway with our amazing show, we'd love to hear from all of our listeners. You can join us at Twitter at eRadioSports, info at eRadioSports.com, and podcastarena.com. We always like to pause and recognize the folks that power us here at SB Nation, and that is O'Reilly Auto Parts. Think O'Reilly Auto Parts for all your car care needs. They are close, convenient, and known for their guaranteed everyday low price. Stop by your local O'Reilly Auto Parts store today. O'Reilly's, better parts, better prices every day. Well, we are jam-packed. Lots to get into. We're going to open our very first segment with some college football, and I'm delighted to open up the mic and welcome back Shay Raftus, the producer at SB Nation Radio. I was off last week. Good to be back in the saddle, Shay.
Hey, how are you, Alyssa?
Hey, I'm very good, and but things are not so good with the team that you love the most, and that's the Ohio State Buckeyes. A pretty volatile coaching situation. What was your reaction, Urban Meyer, being placed on paid administrative leave after some of the allegations that have come out?
Well, it's the right thing they needed to do and the right step they needed to take at this point. There's a lot to be kind of untangled right now. There's a lot of layers to this story. It's a lot of stuff. So we don't want to speculate too much, to be fair. But yes, if he indeed did know, and again, it looks like he did, like that's what all signs are pointing to. But again, there's, you know, still stuff coming out and it's not for sure. But if he did know, there has to be some kind of action taken against him.
Shay, what do you think? I mean, what's your gut tell you? You think he's going to survive Urban Meyer?
What's funny, and I was telling you this earlier, I thought it was basically 90 to 95% that he would get fired. And now I'm hearing some stuff that it may or may not. There's a lot of stuff going on. I could see something to where they might just reinstate him. They might fire him. And they also might give him just a suspension, meet you halfway. I don't know what's going on. A lot of it will come with Ohio State's investigation. That's the real thing we're going to need to look forward as they start that by putting Urban Meyer on an administrative leave. I don't know how long it's going to take. Will it take a week? Will it take a few weeks? We'll see. But that until we know that, I couldn't really even tell you, whereas before I probably would have said he would get fired.
Well, it's kind of wait and see at this point. We'll take a deep dive and continue this discussion with Shay Raftus. Stick around. Much more coming your way. SB Nation Radio, the next generation of sports radio, as we get ready to talk with John Campbell, the Hall of Fame harness racing driver.
This is the Big E Sports Show on SB Nation Radio, live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios in Houston. Here's Alyssa Walker-Campbell.
Okay, it's Friday night. Welcome back, SB Nation Radio and the Big E Sports Show, the next generation of sports radio. As always, we love to hear from our audience. You can join us at Twitter at eRadioSports, info at eRadioSports.com. And if you missed perhaps one of our interviews, so many exclusive guests, you can go to podcastarena.com and go back and listen to the entirety of that interview. Before we get underway with our next segment, though, you've got to thank O'Reilly Auto Parts for all your car care needs. They are close, convenient. They are known for their guaranteed everyday low price. Stop by your local O'Reilly Auto Parts store today. O'Reilly's, better parts, better prices every day. Well, we have covered a lot of ground right here at SB Nation Radio tonight. We've talked about some preseason NFL, some college football. Right now, we're going to shift gears in a big way. We're going to talk about the Hamiltonian, the famed Hamiltonian. It is going to be underway tomorrow. You can watch it live, CBS Sports Network, from 4 to 5:30 Eastern Time. And it is a true honor to have with us Hall of Fame harness racing driver. He is the president of the Hamiltonian Society, and that is Mr. John Campbell. Hello, John.
Hi, Alyssa. How are you?
I'm doing great. It's good to have you on the program. And, you know, perhaps we've got a pretty diverse audience that listens to us, and perhaps they're not familiar with the Hambletonian. Why don't you share a little bit about the background of this very special event?
The Hambletonian is the Super Bowl for harness racing.
Yes.
And harness racing is for trotters and pacers, and these are three-year-old trotters. And it's a worldwide renowned race in the world of harness racing. And everybody that owns a horse or trains a horse, their dream is to get in the Hambletonian.
Mm. And this is the race that the biggest crowd at Meadowlands Racetrack, and it pulls in some of the biggest wagers in the world, right? I mean,
yeah, historically, our Hambletonian racing card is the best bet racing day of the year, especially in North America. There's no doubt about that. And this year's the whole card and auxiliary races is just fantastic. I think we're going to have a really good day this week.
You know, as we think about the history of this race, it's not always been here, right? So kind of share for us, John, and for the listeners, I mean, what is the significance of having the Hambletonian, the biggest moment in harness racing, as you're talking about the Super Bowl, here on the calendar at Meadowlands Racetrack?
Yeah, it did travel around. It was in Syracuse, New York. It was in Goshen, New York. It was actually, I think, contested maybe at Yonkers one time, but it found a home in DuCoin, Illinois for a number of years. And in 1981, I believe, it came to the Meadowlands, and it's been here ever since. And the Meadowlands, we are in northern Jersey. We're right across the Hudson from Manhattan. So it's really been a great fit for our biggest race to be in such a high-profile area. And, you know, it's really developed a following among North Jersey fans, whether they be harness racing fans or just families coming out to see the horses and have their kids participate in all the activities we have for them.
Mm-hmm. I know you guys are anticipating a big turnout. Hey, you're listening to The Voice, Hall of Fame harness racing driver. He is the president of the Hambletonian Society. I got to share a little bit about John Campbell's background. Throughout his 40 years of racing, you won, 10,000 races. Share a little bit about as far as your Hall of Fame background. And I think what's so cool is that, you know, now it's a vicarious thrill. I mean, you still are close to the game. You're still close to the track, right?
Yeah, I'm very fortunate that I found a spot with the Hambletonian Society that allows me to still be involved and actually give back to the game. I grew up with it on a farm in Ontario. My grandfather started racing harness horses back in the 1920s.
And wow.
I followed my dad into it and moved to New Jersey in 1978. And from there, my career kind of took off, and I was fortunate enough to drive, you know, some of the best horses in our sports history and won, you know, most of our major races. So it's actually a dream come true, my career, for me, because when I was a kid, all I dreamt about was driving harness horses and races, and I got to do that for a career. So I feel very fortunate in that regard.
Well, John, I love to brag on you because you are the winningest harness racing driver in the sport's history. How difficult was it for you to step away from, as you're talking about, it's something you'd always dreamed about as a young boy? How difficult was it for you to make that decision to retire after, 39, 40 years?
Yeah, it was a decision that my wife and I thought long and hard about. There's no question, but the opportunity was coming along at a perfect time for me. And as I said, my career, it was a great run, but it has to be over sometime. And I'd rather go a year too early than a year too late.
Mm-hmm.
So just the timing of the opportunity to work with the Hambletonian Society, you know, just worked out to my advantage, I would say. And I'm very content and happy with my decision. As I said, I'm still involved in the game, and so I'm around all the top horses and at all the big races still. So I'm still pursuing my passion.
Well, let's talk about some of those top horses. Of course, the famed Hambletonian is going to air this Saturday from 4 to 5:30 Eastern Time on CBS Sports Network. What can we look forward to? Give us a preview.
Well, we've got 2 9-horse eliminations. The top five will come back about an hour and a half after they race the first time, and whoever wins that will be declared the Hambletonian winner, and it's $1 million purse in the final. The eliminations race for $100,000. This year we have a filly that has stepped up and is trying her luck and fortune against the colts, and She's never raced against this type of competition before, but she's been just sensational this year. Her times have been really eye-popping. She's raced in New York and at Pocono, and she's really, you know, just opened a lot of people's eyes just of her ability. But it's a different kettle of fish when you take on the colts, and I think it adds a lot of intrigue to the race.
John, you're talking about the filly Atlanta, right?
Yes, Atlanta. She's actually second choice in her elimination on the morning line. I think Wolfgang and Atlanta will be close. And then in the other division, we have a horse called Check Six, who just trotted a mile in 150, which is just one-fifth of a second off the world record. He's been very impressive this year as well. Jimmy Tactor, one of our top trainers, has four horses in, two in each elimination, and he's always a factor in the Hamiltonian. And just to brag a little on my brother,
yeah.
Jim Campbell,
okay,
he has
yeah.
three horses in the Hamiltonian. And,
nice.
So he's got a very good chance as well. So there's a lot of storylines and a lot of intrigue going into the race.
Of course, you mentioned trainer Jim Campbell. I mean, this could be a record-setting afternoon for him, right?
Well, it could be. He's actually won the Hamiltonian previously, but it's one of those races you never get tired of being in, let alone winning. So it's I know he's really excited, and he doesn't operate a huge stable. So for him to get three horses in there is quite a feat just with the number of horses that he deals with.
Hey, it is a true honor to have with us tonight John Campbell. He is the Hall of Fame harness racing driver, president of the Hamiltonian Society. Of course, he's with us at SB Nation Radio, the Big E Sports Show. I want to back up just a moment. We were talking about the filly Atlanta. Why is it, John, that throughout the years we haven't seen too many female horses win in either the thoroughbred or the harness racing?
Well, it's different. The competition is just a little bit tougher when they step up against the colt. Historically, we've had fillies win the Hamiltonian in the past. It's been a number of years. It's been about 20 years or more since a filly did win.
Okay.
So it's not unprecedented, but people are just reluctant to pass up. The filly division of the Hamiltonian goes for $500,000. So people are reluctant to give up that $500,000 to race for $1 million. But I commend Atlantis Connections and her trainer, Rick Zeron, for making this decision, because it certainly adds a lot to the race, and they have a lot of confidence in their fillies. They put her in thinking that they could beat the boys. They didn't put her in hoping she'd be first, second, or third. They're thinking that she's got the talent and ability to beat these boys, and I think in their minds, they believe she can beat them. Yeah, they believe she can do it easily. Can she do it? Absolutely. It's certainly possible, because she's an exceptional filly. But as I said, it's an unknown when you step up to that competition that's maybe one and a half steps higher than what she's been racing.
John, it is going to be intriguing to watch. Of course, definitely tune in at CBS Sports Network 4 to 5:30 on Saturday. The famed Hamiltonian will be airing. And it's been a true pleasure to have with us tonight Hall of Fame harness racing driver, the great John Campbell. Thank you so much, John.
Okay, my pleasure, Alyssa.
Okay, stick around. Much more coming your way at the next generation of sports radio. That is SB Nation Radio.
This is the Big E Sports Show on SB Nation Radio, live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios in Houston. Here's Alyssa Walker-Campbell.
Hey, it's Friday night. Welcome back. SB Nation Radio and the Big E Sports Show. Always love to hear from all of our listeners. You can join us at Twitter, at eRadio Sports, and podcastarena.com. As always, think O'Reilly Auto Parts for all your car care needs. They are close, convenient, and known for their guaranteed everyday low price. Stop by your local O'Reilly Auto Parts store today. O'Reilly's, better parts, better prices every day. Well, we always love to bring your way a good book review, and we have selected a dandy. It's the hottest one right now in America, because in sports, we love comebacks. And the inside story of Tom Brady's season of redemption, it certainly has been captured in the brand new book that has just been released, 12, The Inside Story of Tom Brady's Fight for Redemption. Such a true honor to have with us tonight. That is the co-author of the new book, The Patriots and That Tumultuous 2016 Season, Casey Sherman. Good evening, Casey.
Hello, good evening. Thank you for having me.
Well, certainly a lot has been chronicled and written about the 2016 season. Tell us about your new book, and how is it different, and what kind of inside info do you provide?
Oh, well, you know, we had unprecedented access to Tom Brady and to the Patriot organization, really to tell the story of the greatest scandal in American history since the Black Sox scandal of 1919. Now, that's where professional baseball players throwing the World Series. Fast forward to 2015, where the greatest quarterback in NFL history is accused of an equipment violation, but it is really turned into a capital case, Brady being the prime suspect. So, you know, the quarterback himself dealing with external and internal challenges and issues, how he was able to rise above them ultimately and pull off the greatest comeback in Super Bowl, bringing the greatest performances in all of sports.
And, of course, Tom Brady, he was not happy about, in your book you detail, how he was not happy how the Patriots handled Deflategate and what he felt that they should have pursued litigation against the NFL, correct?
That's correct. Patriots Robert Kraft had to make a decision, I think, for the future of the team, because if you sue the NFL, then you're basically Al Davis. You're on the outside looking in when it comes to that very tight-knit community of NFL owners. So I think Kraft made the right decision, but he did not tell Brady he was going to do this ahead of time. So Brady picks up the phone, calls his representative at the NFLPA Association and says, you know, what the bleep? Why isn't anybody supporting me on this? So Brady felt betrayed by Kraft. I think that relationship has been repaired greatly over the past couple of years, but I think the relationship between Brady and Coach Belichick has fractured to the point where we'll see if, you know, which individual remains with the team after this season.
You're listening to The Voice, Casey Sherman, prolific author. His latest release that he co-authored, the book is titled 12, The Inside Story of Tom Brady's Fight for Redemption. A compelling read and new details about the NFL's motivation behind the investigation of Brady. What did you share?
Well, you know, it's interesting that this was a sting operation from the very beginning. The NFL had its chess pieces in place well before the accusation was officially made. You know, we look at Goodell, and he's an interesting character. He's very Nixonian in a way, where he's a little delusional. He, would do anything to attain power and do anything to retain power. Now, let's step back a little bit and reexamine Spygate in 2007, which was a legitimate sports controversy. Coach Belichick was caught basically red-handed videotaping opposing teams' signals, a complete and clear violation of NFL rules. Well, Roger Goodell protected the Patriots during that situation. Kraft groomed Goodell into the position to lead the league. And the NFL looked at that and said, you know, they saw collusion. And I use that word very purposely. Mm-hmm. We hear it every day now. And they said, well, you know, if this happens again, and if the Patriots are accused of any violation, you have to go after them like it's a capital murder case. And that's what Goodell had to basically do. Now, it's Shakespearean in a way as well, because, you know, Goodell metaphorically had to slay his own father, if you will, in Robert Kraft in order to maintain his power. And that's exactly the decision he made.
Casey, you are a veteran sports journalist. Kind of tell us about how you and your colleague, Dave Wedge, how you were able to obtain and get so much access.
Well, it's all about leveraging your relationships. And I will just clarify that I'm a journalist. I'm a sports journalist and 10 best-selling books. And they range from organized crime, from the greatest Coast Guard rescue in American history, and terrorism. I focus on the story itself. I don't just, you know, sports obviously lends itself to incredible drama. The book 12 unfolds like a John Grisham thriller. So anybody across the nation, which is why it's now the hottest selling book in America from a sports perspective, is picking this book up and gleaning new information about corporate America and deceit and betrayal and ultimate vindication.
I want to learn some more, and when we talk about Tom Brady, how did Deflategate, how did this affect his relationship and impact, with his wife Giselle, just the controversy? What kind of impact did this have on his marriage?
Well, you can imagine, the barbarians were at the gate, all the tabloids at the time were, throwing accusations or speculating about the breakup of Brady's marriage. But here we are in 2018, and the marriage that between Tom Brady and his wife Gisele, from the outside looking in, looks stronger than ever. You only can, I don't think that it was impacted negatively. I think that, Brady has such a close relationship with his wife, and his wife, supports him 110%. And, you saw that behind the scenes, and you're seeing that now.
Mm-hmm. Hey, you're listening to The Voice, Casey Sherman. He is an acclaimed journalist and author of 10 books, as he has had mentioned. Tell us about how you guys split up the duties with this particular project. What were some of those rules that, between the two of you?
Well, we had a lot of ground to cover in a very short period of time.
Sure.
So, the two of us would split up and conduct our interviews and harvest material as we went. Writing 10 books, I kind of understand how to put a book together and really create a very strong narrative. And that's really my job, is to really focus on, building the drama over, 300 pages. And Dave is an acclaimed newspaper reporter. He had been for 10 years, and he's great at interesting nuggets and information that we can then sprinkle out through the entire book. So it's a great collaborative, relationship as writers. Oftentimes, are our rivals to each other, but we work together, in an incredible way. It's our third book that we've written together. So we have a great working relationship as far as that's concerned.
Mm-hmm. A fascinating read, 12, the inside story of Tom Brady's fight for redemption and never before revealed details of Tom Brady's rookie year from his roommates and teammates. What did they share?
Well, they share a story about a kid that nobody knew, a young guy that lived in almost this fraternity-like situation, but was incredibly driven from the day he turned up in Foxborough and told owner Robert Kraft, "I'm the best decision you ever made." Now, this was coming from a sixth-round draft pick. Robert Kraft chuckles about it now, but he went back and asked his son Jonathan, who basically runs the team, who is this Brady kid? Because he just confronted me in the parking lot and said he was going to, change the future of the New England Patriot organization. And that's exactly what Tom Brady did.
Well, it was just an incredible finish, of course, for them to win the Super Bowl. And it certainly said a lot about just fortitude and perseverance and just the resilience that he showed, right?
Yeah, and Tom Brady is that transcendent athlete, I think, in American history. And when we all debate the sports Mount Rushmore, we talk about Babe Ruth, we talk about Muhammad Ali, Michael Jordan. I think Tom Brady has earned his spot, in that conversation.
How much longer do you think Tom Brady will play?
For as long as he can play at a very high elite level. You'll never see Brady back up another quarterback. If Brady isn't leading the Patriots or another team deep into the playoffs and potentially the Super Bowl, I think he will step away. I do think that, and this is just me talking, that if he does win the Super Bowl this coming season, I think he would ride off into the sunset, on that type of high.
Hey, Casey Sherman's been with us, SB Nation Radio, the Big E Sports Show, co-author of the new book, 12, The Inside Story of Tom Brady's Fight for Redemption. And, when you were doing all the background and the work for this, was there any surprise interviews, some information that came out that you weren't expecting?
Sure. The legal battle and, some of the unsung heroes that you read about in the book, the lawyers that protected Brady's blind side in a and in these mitigation sessions with the NFL, you get to meet Heather McPhee, who is an incredible, barroom brawler in terms of being a litigator, but yet mm-hmm. She looks like Aaron Brockovich. She's got this huge flowing mane of blonde hair. She's very spunky and doesn't fit the image of this, tough lawyer, but she absolutely is, which is why the story lends itself to Hollywood. Now, I've been blessed to have two of my books adapted into feature films, The Finest Hours in 2016, as well as Patriot's Day. And my partners during in those projects are currently adapting and developing this book into a feature film, and we are, as we speak, talking to studios in Hollywood about taking this on.
Oh, that is exciting. Now, for the first time, of course, all of you readers will have an exclusive look at Brady's experience and, of course, how they was able to stage the greatest comeback in NFL history. And he took care of business. And, of course, we were here in Houston, so we watched it all. Okay?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. Well, Casey, thank you so much for joining us tonight. Of course, we want to encourage you to go out and get a copy of his new book that he co-authored, 12, The Inside Story of Tom Brady's Fight for Redemption. As I said earlier, it is a fascinating read. Congratulations, Casey.
This is the Big E Sports Show on SB Nation Radio, live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios in Houston. Here's Alyssa Walker-Campbell.
Hey, welcome back. Hour number one, SB Nation Radio and the Big E Sports Show, the next generation of sports radio. Always love to connect with all of our guests and our listeners. You can check us out online at Twitter, at eRadio Sports Info, at eradiosports.com, and twice is always nice, podcast.arena.com. We are very excited to go inside the ropes, ready to talk about and highlight, which is already underway, the WGC Brinstone, an exciting field, and delighted to have back with us inside the ropes, and that is former PGA pro and author Larry Miller. Good evening, Larry.
Good evening, Alyssa, and all the golfers out there.
A lot to get into tonight. Very excited to do a full recap as well on the Open at Carnoustie. But first and foremost, what are you looking forward to the most this weekend with the WGC Bridgestone? It's an amazing field.
Well, I'm looking forward to maybe Tiger winning again after such a long time. You know, he's won eight times there. It's the last time it's being held at that course. Eight times. It's pretty amazing. And apparently, obviously, the course suits his game to a T. You know, I've listened to a lot of the so-called experts and given their opinions, and a lot of people are picking Tiger this week, you know, for that reason. And also for the reason that he's seems to be back, you know. I think that he's back in terms of being ready to win again. He certainly proved that. He could have won the British. He could have won three times this year, actually. He sets, what, three top tens already, two near misses. And, I think he can win the tournament. And I think he's back in terms of being ready to win. Now, is he back to being his dominating self like he was? No, not yet. He's going to have to win a couple of times and win big. You know, one of those dominating performances and maybe a major or two. And then you can say, yeah, Tiger's back to his dominant self. But I do think he's back in the sense that he can win at any time. And this might be the week. It's a perfect time for it.
Well, Tiger tied for sixth at the Open Championship, and he had a great chance. At one point, he was in the lead, and there was certainly, Larry, you know, watching that, so much excitement and buzz and hopes of him winning a championship. But I have to wonder, you know, Tiger is playing, as we look at his schedule, five of the next six tournaments. I mean, physically, can he handle that?
That's going to be interesting to see. I have had two prominent neurosurgeons tell me that it's not a matter of when the bag goes. It's not a matter of if. It's a matter of when.
Okay.
Those screws are in there. If he keeps swinging as hard as he does, as fast as he does, I mean, I've had these two really top neurosurgeons tell me that they, you know, it might take a year, it might be next week, might be this week, but at some point they said if he keeps swinging like that, it's going to start loosening and it's going to give way, and so. That means the clock's ticking for him, and if he's going to, you know, win a major or two, he better get with it and start maybe at Belrive next week. But anyway, it's going to be interesting to see. And you're right, in playing that much, you know, that many times in such a short period, what kind of strain and stress that's going to put on that back.
You know, Tiger, he is playing, Larry, as you've talked about many times on the show. He's playing so well. What about on Sundays? What's the key for him to close out a tournament and some of those vulnerabilities that Tiger Woods needs to overcome?
You know, it's really interesting. He has to be patient. You know, Francesco Molinari won that British Open by doing what Tiger has always done.
Right.
He got to that back nine and he just made all pars and a birdie, and he waited for everybody else to mess up. And that's the way Nicklaus won a lot of tournaments. It's the way Hogan won a lot, and it's the way Tiger Woods won a lot of tournaments, by being smart, using his head, being very patient, not trying to force it. And that's what Molinari did to him. And Tiger did just the opposite. He got a little desperate, tried a miraculous lob shot over that bunker, because I think he did that because he was desperate for a win, and just got too aggressive and didn't stay patient, which is uncharacteristic. And that's why I say he's not quite all the way back to the way he was. But still, you know, Tiger at 85% is better than most people at 100%.
Yeah, and his world ranking right now is 50th. And I'm so glad, Larry, that tonight you bring up the player that is on fire, and that is Francesco Molinari. What has been the key to just this incredible rise that he has had in 2018? You were talking about his patience on the course.
Yeah, he's got great control of his emotions. He doesn't get too excited or too upset. Just rolls along making pars. He's a great, great ball striker in terms of accuracy, especially with his irons. And so, you know, if he gets the ball in the fairway, he's going to get it in 25 feet or under for birdie. I mean, he's just that good with his irons. But, you know, golf is cyclical, and even the greatest ball strikers in history have little periods where they get red hot and then it starts to fall off. It's the nature of the game. It's the nature of golf. He just can't master it all the time. He has been really great at mastering it for weeks now, months. But at some point, it's going to start slackening off. But no, he's a great ball striker, and he's got a great temperament for the game as well.
Well, Francesco, he becomes the first Italian major winner, as we were talking about. He wins the British Open. And so, you know, how do you maintain that level of consistency like Francesco Molinari has had?
I think one thing is trying to pace yourself with the starts and the tournaments you play. For instance, you know, Molinari, if he plays too many weeks in a row, he's going to get tired physically. Once that happens, then the swing changes a little bit and you start losing it. So you have to be smart in pacing yourself. That's why you see all these top players, you know, play a couple of weeks and then lay off a week or two and then play again, because they know that you just can't keep it going. You know, Harvey Pinnick told one day Ben Crenshaw and Tom Kite were hitting balls on the range, and they were hitting balls for 2, 3, 4 hours without stopping. And so Harvey Pinnick walks over to him and he says, "Boys, if you stay here long enough, you're going to find a way to miss it."
You know? And right.
There's a lot of truth to that. You got to leave well enough alone when you really got it going, and don't beat it to death. And because you wear your body out, once the legs go. And listen, you know this from sports. Once the wheels go, that's it. You know, and you're not gonna perform. Everything goes, balance and rhythm and everything. So you got to keep your legs fresh and strong.
Absolutely. Hey, you're listening to the familiar voice, Larry Miller, who is a life member of the PGA of America and former PGA Tour player. He is the author of 4 books on golf and performance. His latest release, in actually 2017, is Ben Hogan's Secret Fundamental: What He Never Told the World. And one of the players I wanted to highlight tonight and kind of get your takeaways on how he played at the Open is Jordan Spieth. Of course, he was the defending champion going into the Carnoustie Golf Links. What did you take away from his performance at Carnoustie?
Well, the ball striking was there. It was really extremely good. But then once again, the putting, the short putting issue raised its head once again, especially under pressure near the end. He putted pretty well early on. But you saw at crunch time what happened. He missed 3-4 putts inside 8 feet. And you're not going to win that way, and that's why he didn't win, and he backed up at the end. So I don't know if he's got that putting problem fixed or not. It looked like it for a while there, but then it popped up again, and it's got to be in his head. You know, once you start missing him, then you start doubting yourself. So Jordan's going to have to somehow regain his confidence on short putts. Once he does that, the ball striking has been great, and he'll be in the winner's circle again soon if he gets that putter straightened up.
Okay, so we talk about Jordan Spieth. One of the guys that we know is just going to have a breakout is Ricky Fowler. Where do you see him at? Here we are, you know, past the midpoint of the season. I mean, gosh, it's hard to believe the season is actually starting to wind down.
Yeah, the last major coming up next week. Well, Ricky's a mystery, you know. He's a mystery as to why he doesn't close the deal more. And he just, you know, he's had some great rounds, some low rounds, but he always throws a 73 or 4 in there and takes himself out of it. The key is to sustain, you know, these days to win on the PGA Tour, whether it's a major or just a regular tournament, is you have to sustain good play for 4 days. The fields are so deep in quality now that you can't afford a 74, you know, unless you have a 62 in there. And so you need 4 good rounds to win these days. And Ricky hasn't been doing that. He'll have 2 or 3 and then 1 mediocre round. And I think that's why he's not winning. But sooner or later, you would think, as good as he is, he's going to put 4 together and walk away with 1. I don't know if it's going to be at Belrive in the PGA. I don't know if that course suits his game that well. But anyway, sooner or later, he's young and he's going to pull through and win a major before it's over.
You know, if you were advising him, Larry, how would you construct his game plan in order for him to close out? Because he's been there. He's been in the hunt.
I think I'd tell him to be a little bit less aggressive and be more patient. He fires at pins, and he's a very aggressive player off the tee and with his irons. I mean, you look at his swing, and there's no patience in that swing. He's going after it with every shot. But kind of like Arnold Palmer did. He reminds me of Palmer, the way he played. But but I think Ricky, you know, he's going to have to be a little bit more patient and play a little bit better course management, you know, in terms of letting the birdies happen. You know, the key to golf is you just keep making pars. You keep making solid pars, and you let the birdies happen when they happen. If you start trying to force the birdies, that's when you mess up.
Okay, one of the things that we've got to have you weigh in on tonight, of course, Tiger Woods and Phil, they are going to face off Thanksgiving weekend. As I understand, the purse has not been determined, but it's going to be at Shadow Creek Golf Course in North Las Vegas. I know you're not a big fan, but kind of, you know, for the folks that are tuning in tonight and listening to your take on this, kind of share why you're not for this.
Well, I'm not for it because I think it starts putting golf into the realm of wrestling, you know, and you know, this pay-per-view stuff where you know you'll pay through the nose to watch this match, and then it's real close or it comes out even, and so now they're going to have a rematch and charge another, you know, $75 for pay-per-view. I just think I don't like to see it in golf. I think I would rather see Tiger and Phil just amongst themselves say we're going to put up $10 million each and play for it. And there's no pay-per-view. The gallery can pay to get in and watch if they want to, and that's fine. That would be fun. The fun of it, you know, and even though I'm against it in that way, the fun of this is going to be is that you're able to watch two of the greatest players in history play golf against each other. That's going to be the fun of it. And so you're going to see great shots, some great dialogue, you know, and great insight into the game. That's going to be the fun part, but I don't like the commercial end of it.
Well, I have to ask you, will you and Connie, will you watch?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Positively. Do we have a little more time?
Oh, absolutely. Go ahead.
I want to bring something up. I want to talk about Alyssa's son, Steven, who won last week. He at Pinehurst, North Carolina.
Yes.
Steven won the World Team Championship. Yeah. Not the country, the world. He beat players from all over the world, and he won the golf tournament. And that is just an outstanding win, an outstanding performance. And there's going to be a big, big fight among the coaches to get him to some college.
Well, it was certainly, Larry, thank you for mentioning that about Steven. It was a memorable week, no doubt about it. And for him to have the opportunity, you know, once again to play at Pinehurst number 8 for the first 2 days and then the final round at Pinehurst number 2. And it's so interesting because so many of these golden nuggets that you share each and every week, you know, as I was his caddy for those 3 days, I was able to encourage him and really talk to him about being patient. I mean, because on number 9, he ended up with a triple, and he was 4 over going into that back 9. And I said, you just got to keep being patient, do your routine. And it came down to the final shot where he had a 10-yard chip in to save par. and the whole gallery just went crazy. It was an exhilarating finish, to say the least. But so thank you so much for bringing up Stephen.
That's a testament to his inner strength to make a triple and come back and win that tournament.
Well, there's just so many amazing junior golfers. It's very competitive, and it's great to be a part of it. PGA News and Notes will continue with former PGA pro Larry Miller after this quick break.
This is the Big E Sports Show on SB Nation Radio, live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios in Houston. Here's Alyssa Walker-Campbell.
Hey, welcome back. Hour number one, SB Nation Radio, the Big E Sports Show. We're going to continue our conversation with former PGA pro Larry Miller. Hey, yep. As we get ready to close out our interview, Larry, for all of our golfers out there, what kind of advice? It's been a while since we've kind of given them some advice. The summer, the PGA Tour season is starting to, as I'd mentioned earlier, it's starting to wind down. It's still hot here in Texas, but any particular advice that you would give to perhaps some of our listeners?
You know, this is a real fundamental thing, but it's so important. The most important thing in playing good golf, in learning to play good golf, is to have a really good address position at the ball, to set up correctly to the ball.
Right.
And I'm talking about everything, about stance, about posture, about ball position, hand position. You know, read up, you know, go to your local PGA professional or just read a fundamental book and make sure that you put yourself in a really good starting position, because if you're in a bad starting position, you're going to have to compensate for that during the swing. And when you start doing that, there's no chance for consistency. So the only way to be consistent with good ball striking is to have a consistent address, correct position.
Mm-hmm.
Worth its weight in gold.
And I was going to say, you know, perhaps there's a parent that's tuning in tonight and they're wanting to get their son or daughter, you know, involved in the game of golf. And I would really encourage them to find a good PGA professional. So many times I see parents, they're trying to teach their kids and they're not teaching them the correct fundamentals. And then it's frustrating not only for the child, but it is very frustrating for the parent as well. And you want to have, you know, that good dynamic going on between the parent and the child.
Yeah, if you start off with bad fundamentals, it's really hard to undo it later on. So it's really important to get started on the right foot.
Of course, you also got to go out and get a copy of Ben Hogan's Secret Fundamental from author and former PGA pro. That is Larry Miller, who joins us each and every week at SB Nation Radio as we go inside the ropes. Always our favorite guest. Thank you, Larry, so much for joining us.
Oh, it was fun. And we'll talk about PGA next week.
Okay, absolutely. Much more coming your way. And the fastest 2 hours in radio, that is SB Nation Radio and the Big E Sports Show. Come on back.
Are you a questioner, a wanderer, or even a bit of a snooper? If so, then you'll feel right at home in Knoxville. We've got miles of trails to wander in our urban wilderness, award-winning eateries to satisfy your culinary cravings, cultural sites to open your mind, and dog-friendly activities that'll have everyone wagging. Knoxville, calling the curious. Learn more at visitknoxville.com.